Okay, shalom everyone. Good evening. Today is January 17th, and we are in our third series already of our Wednesday night learning. And this is a series on Jewish law and moral society. And there are three sessions in this overall series. This first one is doing business with unethical companies. The second is Judaism and political power. And the third is poverty, hunger, and homelessness. Okay, so let's get started. And by way of introduction, I'll note that this class is going to be really broken up into two parts. In part one, we're going to look at, I guess, what we would call hard halachic texts regarding this question of doing business with unethical companies. And the second, I guess we would fall under meta halacha. They are Jewish texts, Torah texts, halachic texts, but they don't specifically speak to our topic, but they do urge us to think about them perhaps in a different way than the material in the first part of the class does. So that's a little bit of a roadmap of what we're going to be doing. If you have any questions, feel free to use the raise hand emoji on WhatsApp, or to, if your screen is on, to actually physically raise your hand. And if all else fails, just unmute yourself and yell and shout, and we'll try to address your question. So the question of dealing with unethical companies is there are a few ways to tackle this question. One more common question that I've seen addressed is the question of ownership in unethical companies, which again could be broken down into a number of situations. One could be owning stock in a company that one feels is acting unethically. And the other, which is probably less of an issue considering the way that halakha views corporations and how halakha views stock ownership. I think it's safe to say that the consensus opinion is that owning stock in a company does not make one a real owner and therefore responsible slash culpable, and certainly even capable of making any change in the way the company acts, unless one owns a majority of it, in which case that they are an owner and not a stockholder. Or one could actually own a company or be a 40, 50, 60% partner in a company that's acting unethically. That's the more common situation where we see addressing unethical companies. And the other is the one we're going to discuss, which is doing business with unethical companies, buying something from an unethical company. Is a specific question that came to me, which led me to want to research this topic. I'll note as well that I am not going to define today for you what makes a company ethical or unethical. That is really a company by company conversation, and is well beyond what we have the ability to do today. But hopefully, when we draw the conclusions, you'll say, "Oh, well, this company is unethical," and what I learned today either means I can or I can't. I will or I won't. So what are some of the activities that companies can do that were problematic activities that companies can be engaged in that may make it problematic for me, for one, to want to do business with them? So here's a list of some, and there are probably others. And after I go through my list, if you want to add others, by all means, add up. One could be business improprieties with respect to workers, consumers, or suppliers. Right, I go to a restaurant and I see that the owner is treating the wait staff or the cleanup staff, whatever the staff is, in an unethical way, or I find that they are paying them an unethical wage, right? So I may want, do I have an obligation to stop going to that restaurant? It could be a company wherein their production harms the environment or could potentially endanger the well-being of people through air pollution or through hazardous chemicals. Again, I don't own the company, but I know that the company has been accused of this or there are real concerns about this, right? Do I have the right or should I stop doing business with that company? And by the way, this is not only about doing business from the perspective of a purchaser. This also could be doing business from the perspective of a supplier, right? I know that this company is polluting, and if I would stop selling them widgets, maybe it's going to make a difference. Maybe it's not going to make a difference. But am I allowed to continue doing business with them? And that kind of thing. Another activity which could be problematic would be products that harm people directly, such as cigarettes or guns. Right. This is an interesting question. Am I allowed to be a gun seller? That's not what we're talking about, but am I allowed to, I don't know, go buy a holster for my fake gun from a company that sells real guns? Well, whatever, whatever the case may be. Another example could be business activity which one would find morally problematic, a strip club or a casino, if one finds that morally problematic. So can I go have dinner in that casino? I'm not going to gamble, but I'm going to be engaging in business practices. Or can I sell that casino the bling to decorate their slot machines, right? Whatever the case may be. And another example would be if a company discriminates or treats people inequitably. So all these would be examples of problematic types of activity that may lead me to question whether or not I should be doing business with them. Again, doing business either as a customer or as, let's say, some sort of supplier. Let me stop here. Any other examples that you want to add to our list of problematic business practices that would make me scratch my head? Kyan.
Well, I'm just wondering, is there a difference between the business being unethical and, the president or CEO or some other executive, being a not nice person or just in their personal life or in some other business they're doing something that's not good?
We'll see. We'll see how the sources may or may not address that. Some might not. Okay. Any others? Rabbi Gerson, you're unmuted. Is that because you were just unmuted, or do you wanted to say something?
I've been unmuted. I think your list is pretty comprehensive, Rabbi.
Okay. All right. Anybody else want to add? Okay, great. So let me share my screen and jump to the sources that we're going to use to discuss this question. So the one of the main sources that I think we should study when thinking about this question is the halachic category of lifnei iver lo titein michshol, which is literally do not put a stumbling block before the blind, but that we don't generally take that literally. We essentially understand that Chazal, halacha, generally understands that to me to mean that we are responsible. We are not allowed, let me put it this way, we are not permitted to assist someone in the commission of a sin. Right? That's what we're talking about here. We are not allowed to assist someone in the commission of a sin. We're not allowed to abet moral misconduct. Okay? So let's look at some of the sources and see what type of how far this goes and what type of limitations are on this halacha. So the Gemara in Masechet Sanhedrin is talking about children being punished for the sins of their fathers. Kidetanya v'af ba'avonot avotam atemi maku kishe ochzin ma'aseh avotam bi'adeh. We have a pasuk, and also in the iniquities of their fathers shall they pine away with them, is referring to a case where they adopt the actions of their ancestors as their own. Ata omer kishe ochzin o eino ela kishe ein ochzin. Do you say that it's referring specifically to a case where they adopt the actions of their ancestors? Or perhaps it applies even where they do not adopt their ancestors' actions. Kishu omer ish bechatao yumtu, hare kishu ochzin ma'aseh avotam bi'yadeihem. The pasuk says, every man shall be put to death for their own sins. So the Torah says that this must be talking about a situation where they are following the sinful ways of their fathers. No, we have another passage that says, and they shall stumble upon one another. This verse is homiletically interpreted to mean that the Jewish people shall stumble, one due to the iniquity of another. They are punished for each other's sins, which teaches that all Jews are considered guarantors, responsible for one another. So here, the Gemara learns that we are, that every single individual, every single Jewish person is responsible for the actions of other people. And so therefore, if someone is sinning, on some level, that's my problem too, even though I'm not sinning. Right? Now, this is a high bar, right? This is a very, very high bar. So the Gemara continues and says, Hatam shehaya bi'adam limchot v'lo michu. The Gemara explains that the verse in Vayikra, which talks about, which says here, Lo tisnat achicha bilvavecha, ocheach tochechet amitecha, you shall not hate your kinsfolk in their heart, reprove your kin, and incur no guilt. When does that apply? In a case where you had the ability to protest the sin, but you did not protest. So one is punished for not protesting. But if one did not have the ability to protest, or if one was not going to be successful in that protest, maybe they are not liable for their action. So how would this apply to our situation? It might apply to our situation that if there is a company that we think is acting inappropriately, first of all, to whatever degree we can, we have an obligation to give that company tochacha. We have an obligation to protest that company's actions. It could be a strike. It could be some other type of, living in New York, you often see a big inflatable rat in front of a building, which is indicative that the company is not working with the unions. And the union is protesting and wants everyone to know that this company or this building is being built with non-union labor. So maybe I have an obligation to do that. On the other hand, if I can't or if it's not going to work, maybe I'm not obligated. So that's one sort of in broad strokes. How this notion of do not put a stumbling block before the blind may apply to our situation. However, the Gemara and other sources limit lifnei iver, limit the application of not putting a stumbling block before the blind in a number of ways, meaning under certain circumstances, even if one is assisting a sinner, one may not have fallen afoul of the prohibition of helping the sinner. Okay? So the classic example of lifnei iver lo titein michshol is handing a cup of wine to a nazir. Right? A nazir is someone who has taken a vow, and one element of that vow is they are not allowed to drink wine. So I'm out to lunch with my nazir friend, and I order a bottle of wine, and I fill up two cups of wine, and I hand the cup of wine to my nazir friend. Right? That seems like a clear problem, right? It would be a clear prohibition of lifnei iver lo titein michshol. I am aiding and abetting this person in the performance of a sin. So the Gemara says, not so fast. The Gemara here in Masechet Avodah Zarah says, minayin shelo yoshit adam koshel yayin lenazir, ve'eiver minachai livnei noach. How do I know that I'm not allowed to give a cup of wine to a nazir, or the limb severed from a living animal to a Noahide who is obligated in that mitzvah? Gemara says, Gesundheit, b'lifnei iver lo titein michshol. The Gemara says, and you shall not put a stumbling block before the blind. But then the Gemara says, wait, v'ha'hacha d'chi lo yahavinan le shakli ihu v'ka'avar mishum lifnei iver lo titein michshol. But here in both cases, if one does not give it to him, he can take it himself. And if the one who provides it to him transgresses due to the prohibition, you shall not put a stumbling block before the blind. Meaning, if the person's going to be able to get the wine or the Eber Minachai on their own, the fact that I'm giving it to them is not causing them the sin. They could do it. They could just get it. They could have gotten up and ordered their own bottle of wine in the restaurant. The Gemara then answers, Hacha b'mayaskinan. What are we talking about in this case? Dikai betray avrei nahara. We're talking about a situation where they are standing on two sides of the river, and therefore the recipient could not have taken it by himself. Right? The wine is not in the store. The wine is somehow unavailable to the nazir. And the only way it's available to the nazir is if I give it to the nazir. But in the case where it's available to the nazir on his own, then I am not in violation of lifnei iver lo titein michshol. This is what I've labeled, based on some reading I've done, the unfeasibility principle, meaning the biblical prohibition against abetting sinful activity only applies where the commission of the misdeed would not have been possible without that aid. If it would have been possible without that aid, then I am not in violation of lifnei iver lo titein michshol. So let's take an example, right, from the cases that we talked about at the beginning, right? If it seems unlikely that my doing business, my purchasing something from a company, and that company is engaged in pollution, it seems unlikely that my purchase from that company is going to actually be the tipping point in that company's ability to continue to do business, and therefore to continue to pollute. Likewise, it seems unlikely, unless I'm the only one who sells the particular widget that that company needs, it also seems unlikely that if I am going to supply this company, if I'm going, that by supplying the company, I am giving them the opportunity to continue their unethical behavior. Well, it's more likely that they'll just find another supplier for what they need. Right? So in order for me to be in violation of aiding and abetting the sinful activity of someone else, based on the pasuk of lifnei iver lo titein michshol, that specific biblical prohibition, It has to be in a situation where without my help, they'd be unable to continue doing their bad acts. Seems certainly as a customer, it seems that that's a high, that that's almost never the case. And even as a supplier, in a world where we have worldwide supply chains, it seems like it would be also unlikely that I'd be guilty. Now, this doesn't mean that there may be other reasons not to do business with this company, but we're going to go step by step. Okay, that's sort of concern number one. Look, may Iverlo and I'll just note, without going through the sources, that Rav Moshe Feinstein and Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank also argue that if there's a low probability that the prohibition will be done, or there's a low probability that what I am giving them is going to be used in the prohibited activity, then that also removes culpability in terms of violating Lifnei Iver Lo Titein Milsho. Rav Moshe Feinstein's example actually may be applicable. His example is he permits a supplier to give merchandise on consignment to a Jew who may sell that merchandise on Shabbat, or for a wholesaler to sell merchandise outright to someone who may do business with it on Shabbat. In each case, it's uncertain what will be done with the merchandise because it's likely that they have a stock of merchandise already, and the new one that you're selling them will be put on the shelf, and they'll use the older one first. So the chances are they're not going to use the one you're giving to them right away for Shabbat, and therefore Lifnei Iver would not apply. So this may be a little more complicated to apply if one is the regular supplier to a company of something. But again, if you're not sure, let's say there are different divisions of the business in situations like that, that may again indicate that Lifnei Iver Lo Titein Milsho does not apply. All right, let me stop here before we move on to another limiting principle and see if there are any comments or questions.
Hey,
Anybody?
Rabbi. I don't know if you addressed this. Sorry, we're about 10 minutes late, but the list of prohibited conduct, did I miss it? Or are we getting to it? Because
I just listed a few things. I'll quickly say, let's say the company is a polluter, or the company treats their workers disrespectfully or unfairly, or it's an activity that a person finds morally problematic, like a strip club or a casino, or indecent advertising, or discrimination and inequitable treatment of groups or individuals, or you name it. Like I wasn't defining what's unethical. That's every person's personal decision. The question is, if there's a company that you've defined as unethical because they sell green clothing and you don't like green, right? Now, but what type of support of that business, either as a customer or as a supplier, would be problematic from a Jewish halachic ethical perspective?
thank you.
Okay, great. I'll also note, by the way, that the Tzitz Eliezer Yehuda Waldenberg, who was a very important posek of contemporary times, he was asked a question also along these lines about the unethical behavior that he was concerned with was Shabbat violation. And he has the following to say, which I found really interesting and feels to me like a very broad exemption from Lifnei Iver, which, and this is the source. Actually, let me just number the sources. This is source number 14. The numbers magically appear. In source number 14, the Tzitz Eliezer says, "Kfi she'ani mevin mitoch ha'she'ela, yesh kvar le'kooperative ahistadruti shteyasvinot u'mechallelim behem kvar le'da'avoneinu et ha'Shabbat." Here, the question was, can a number of Jewish investors invest in a company that has two boats, where they take people on tours on and they work on Shabbat. And so these investors asked Rav Voldenberg, and Rav Voldenberg says, as far as he understands, the company already has these boats and they already operate. These are just new investors coming in, maybe new capital coming in, and they are already breaking Shabbat. He says there are three reasons why I think it would be okay to invest in such a company. That the addition of these 16 religious investors, al shmonim ha'ish, on top of 80 existing investors or owners, lo yitosef b'kach kima'at yoter avodah b'shabbatot l'mechala, is not going to add any further Shabbos desecration. The same two boats are going to continue doing the same work on Shabbos. So I found this to be really fascinating, right? In the sense that if your investment, purchase, or maybe even supplying of the company is not going to add to their existing immoral behavior, right? They're not going to open up another smokestack. Or they're not going to do, the company's not going to open up another casino or another billboard. It seems that Mitzitz Eliezer is saying in such a case, one is not in violation of Lifnei Iver. Because potentially you're not really helping in that case. You're not materially adding to the immoral behavior. I found that to be a fascinating reduction, I guess. Limitation in how we apply Lifnei Iver Lo Titein Michshol. So there are some other limitations, but the three main ones are that your activity has to be the reason why that person is able to act unethically. Second is there has to be a strong probability that your action is causing the immoral activity. And three, it seems that in order to be in violation of Lifnei Iver, one has to do something that actually adds new immoral activity. But if not, it does not seem to be in violation of Lifnei Iver. So, Chaim, in your quick case where the person's just, a jerk, these cases may not be so helpful, right? Because you're not concerned that the company is acting immorally. You're concerned that there happens to be an owner of a company who, let's say, is an anti-Semite or is suspected of being an anti-Semite. Is it proper to purchase from that person? So, from a business halacha perspective, it seems that these sources may not directly impact that question unless, the person, well, I guess the person uses the profits from that company to let's say, support their lifestyle, which includes anti-Semitism. But there's another, Rav Yaakov Kanievsky limits Lifnei Iver also to really direct support. And it would go a long way to say, well, if I buy a widget from this company who's anti-Semitic, then that purchase is giving the owner of the widget company the ability to, open up a Twitter account and tweet anti-Semitic things. That seems far-fetched. It seems that's not listen. That's not Rabbi Chaim Kanievsky doesn't call that Lifnei Iver Lo Titein Michshol. He calls that Lifnei Vilifnei. Like it's too far back on the in the food chain to really be an issue. Again, there are other sources which I think will bear on your question, but I'm not sure if these directly do. Does that?
Well, there might be a difference between personally buying and if there's a boycott, let's say a Jewish boycott of a company, then participating in that, as a group, you do have a little bit more sway.
100%, 100%, because then you'd be dealing with another situation of let's say, al tifrosh min hatzibur, right? Not abandoning the Jewish community, and the whole Jewish community is engaged in, let's say, the Rambam says the whole Jewish community is engaged in fasting over a certain sarah, and you decide not to, right? That's problematic Jewish behavior. Correct. So if there would be a boycott of that widget company, then you're right. Then I think that'd be another question for us to address. Yeah. I see my mother and Josh Furman. So Josh, with your permission, I'll go with my mom first.
Just a quick question. What if you know there's something wrong with the company? Are you obliged to tell your friends or your people about it?
If you are 100% certain that this company is engaged in ethically problematic behavior, and your motivation is to stop people from helping that company succeed, then I think yes.
Well, that's the only reason you would tell them, because you don't want them dealing with them.
You may have a personal vendetta against the owner of the company. You may not be sure. You may have a suspicion, but you're not sure. Right? These are the laws of Lashon Hara, where you have to be absolutely certain that you're right. You have to be doing it for the right motivation. You have to be certain that it's for the purpose of fixing the situation and no other sort of ulterior motive. Certainly, if something's dangerous, then that's of course obligatory. Okay, Josh.
Okay, I'm hearing in some of the examples that you brought tonight and in other things that I've studied, that there seems to be some kind of propensity among certain post-scheme to be lenient when, you know, a Jew needs to make a living. And so we'll be as, you know, lenient as possible or as broad as possible in understanding the applicability of certain halachot. Would you agree with that? Or is this just kind of, I'm cherry picking?
No, the Torah, there's a halachic principle of HaTorah chasan al mamonam shel Yisrael, that the Torah has mercy on our money, and therefore doesn't want us to pay $600 for an etrog, and wants us to, yes. And so that's true when it comes to, but it would not, it would, I don't think it would apply to an outright iser d'oraita. Right? For example, you and I have been talking about this book I've been reading about early halachic problems faced by early immigrants, Jewish immigrants to America. So I don't think that you would find the posek that says you could, it's very hard to make a living in America as a new immigrant. And so therefore you could outright violate Shabbat on a d'oraita level for your job. I don't think you'd find that. I think you'd find in other situations where there's a gray area, poskim taking a lenient view. And this may be an example of in a situation where I this is the job I have. It's not the greatest company in the world, but from what I can tell, it's not a direct violation of Ne'iver lo titein milchol if I work for them. And the posek may say, you're right. You know, maybe put your resume out on LinkedIn, but until you get a nibble, I don't think you have to go hungry. While someone else who, let's say, I don't know, who it's a side hustle for them, and the side hustle seems to be a little shady or shaky, then you may find the posting who says, no, maybe you should set it aside because you have a parnasa, and this is not your parnasa. If this was your parnasa, maybe we look at it differently. Okay. Now, having said that the bar to actually violate lefnei iver lo titein michshol is quite high, there is another issue at stake, and that is the rabbinic prohibition of assisting moral misconduct, right? Even after we clear the possibility that we are not in violation of lefnei iver lo titein michshol, we may still run afoul of the rabbinic prohibition of helping someone sin. The Gemara in Masechet Shabbat. The Tosfot in Masechet Shabbat deals with this and asks a question, why in a certain case the Gemara did not bring up the possibility of Lefnei Iver Lo Titein Michshol, And the Gemara says, well, because it does not, because it meets the standard that the sinner was going to be able to commit the sin without the person's help, right? Right? We said before the unfeasibility principle. Then the Tosfot says, well, what about this problem? What about misayeya lidei ovrei avera? What about the rabbinical prohibition of simply of helping someone sin, or the obligation of keeping someone far away from sin? There the bar is set much lower. But there are, again, some exclusionary principles. So, for example, the Shach, Rabbi Shabtai Meir HaKohen, one of the commentaries on the Shulchan Aruch, says that the rabbinical injunction of Misayeya applies only to moral misconduct by a Jew. Fascinating, right? Only to moral misconduct by a Jew. Not only that, it doesn't apply either to a Jewish apostate. So this, in this case, if one holds, in fact, like the Shach, and Josh is a good example of what would happen in your case, not everyone holds like the Shach, but if someone needs their parnasa and the only loophole they found is this Shach, then you could see, yeah, okay, you know, you work for a non-Jew, and the non-Jew, you're too far down the food chain to have a direct impact. But what about the rabbinic prohibition of misayeya, of assisting and abetting a sinner? But the owner is a non-Jew, and this higher level of conduct does not apply. So in most cases, these companies are owned by non-Jews, or if they're publicly traded, it doesn't even matter because the ownership is so diffuse, if that's the word, that you can't say it's owned by a Jew. So that would erase the concern even of misayeya lifnei ovrei avera. The Tzitz Eliezer, back to the Tzitz Eliezer that we saw before in that same tshuva, he specifically holds of that situation where the owners were apostates. They were just completely non-observant. They didn't care about any matter of halacha, and therefore it doesn't apply to them. That's a complicated area and a very sensitive area of halacha, about how halacha views a Jewish, let's say, Jewish sinners. But lemase, another reason why the Tzitz Eliezer allowed these 16 religious investors to invest in that boat company was not only because it wasn't giving them anything, it wasn't giving them the opportunity to sin anew. They were also apostates, and it didn't apply to them. It didn't apply to them at all. And you see here in this source number 21, he directly quotes the Shach as agreeing with him. So let's take another breather, and just look at the evidence, which you went through very quickly, which is we have two issues. One is lifnei iver lo titein mechshol, and the other is misayeya lifnei ovrei avera, the biblical prohibition of not helping someone sin, like giving a nazir a cup of wine, and the biblical prohibition of not abetting a sinner, which has a much lower standard, but certently in the case of a shach, which I think would cover many of our situations that we're talking about, does not apply to a company owned by a non-Jew. It seems that in many of these cases, owning, having a partial ownership, being a customer or even a supplier would not necessarily run afoul of the technical prohibition of lifnei iver lo tei mechshol, or the technical prohibition of misayeya lifnei ovrei avera. And that would certainly be the situation of many of the circumstances that we are talking about. Okay, I want to stop here to any further questions and ask you a question. My question to you is that the end of the discussion? Or is there something else maybe that we should be thinking about other than these sort of, like I said, let's say hard halakhic principles, right? Or this, or like even when you ask this question, is the first thing that comes to your mind like a line in the Shulchan Aruch or in the Rambam or in a tshuva that says technically I am in violation or technically I'm not in violation, or does this type of question hit you on a different level?
Well, I'm thinking about it also from a professional perspective. I mean, I get paid to tell companies the risk of what their actions they want to take. And so be it, you know, illegal, unethical or whatnot, you know, I tell them what it is and, you know, we discuss the risks of it, but that's been the perspective that I've been looking at it of is, okay, do I say, you know, don't do this. That's a very minor thing, you know, don't want to beat your chest over every risk that there is or every potential unethical thing. Cause I mean, I think ethical is also so I asked in the beginning, right? Is there a set list of what is ethical, quote unquote, right? Cause I might say it's ethical to, if you don't give a discount to, you know, to people in need, that might be unethical, but is it a business decision who you give a discount to? Sure. And so that's kind of how I've been looking at it so far.
Right. So that's very interesting. I think that goes to part of the complexity of this question is what in fact is unethical? What's the line between illegal and unethical? I think companies have to deal with that often as well. So coming in from a professional perspective, okay, great. Any other angle that people are thinking of? Rabbi Gerson.
One question I would ask, as I'm just reflecting on what you've shared, is this problem driven by cases, or is it driven by principles that underlie, you know, Jewish morals and, you know, halacha in general?
I'm not sure if I understand the question. What do you mean by cases? What do you mean by that?
So as we've been discussing, different participants have given, for example, this and for example, that. So are we more motivated to look at this problem based on applications to situations in life? Or is this more about an amorphous kind of principle that we're supposed to abide by that's as philosophical as it is practical?
So I think this first half is about, I think, like hard principles that are in place. I think the second is going to be more philosophical. Yeah. And and as Josh put in the chat, can I versus should I? And so I think so far we've answered the can I, which seems like it's really, you really have to be very much, you have to be the CEO, right, of a company that where you drive the truck and dump the green sludge into the river, right? That's clearly usher, right? And or if you're the driver for that company, I'd say that's usher. Although actually the truth is maybe not, because if you don't do it, they're going to find another driver. So you know it's so hard to apply this. However, there is another sort of aspect of this which I think is very important. And in the end, very much leaves a decision in the... and it's also, you'll notice that, like, for example, the Tzitz Eliezer, he wasn't talking about an amorphous principle. He was talking about Chilul Shabbos. So it's clear, Chilul Shabbos is Asur. Great. So now, what is my culpability in terms of involvement with a company that's Mechalel Shabbos? It's very different than some of the situations that we're dealing with, because it may not be asur, it may not be illegal. It may, who's to, if you ask one ethicist, they'll say it's okay. If you ask another ethicist, they'll say it's not okay. That's why I think the question of whether the action is unethical is a very personal one. We can provide the principles that help us think about that question. So one of them is Lefnei Iver Lo Temech Shal. But another one is this pasuk in Devarim. V'yasita ha-yashar v'hatov b'nei Hashem. You should do what is good and right in the sight of God. So you may be wondering about this question, about this pasuk, which is, what does it add to my list of permitted and prohibited activities? Right? The Torah tells me what I'm allowed to do. The Torah tells me what I'm not allowed to do. Presumably the things I'm allowed to do are yashar v'hatov, and the things that I'm not allowed to do are the things that are not yashar v'hatov. Right? Lashon hara is yashar v'hatov. I'm sorry, is not yashar v'hatov. And being supportive of someone is yashar v'hatov. Right? So what does this end? So I want to look at the Sefer HaChinuch and the Ramban, and one other fascinating source. The Sefer HaChinuch, which is a book by an anonymous author written in the Middle Ages, with essays on each of the 613 mitzvot of the Torah. This is mitzvah 611. He assumes this under the mitzvah of imitating God. That we are commanded to perform all of our actions in the way of straightness and goodness with all our strength, and to incline all of our affairs that are between ourselves and others toward the ways of kindness and mercy, as we have known from our holy Torah that this is the way of God. And he quotes some other psukim as well. And they say, may the memory be blessed. An explanation of this, just as like the Holy One, blessed be he, is called merciful. So you should be merciful, just like Holy One is compassionate. So you should be compassionate. He's righteous. You should be righteous. God is just. You should be just. And the list goes on and on. V'asita ayashar v'ato. So this, I think, is an overlay on top of the issue of helping someone sin, of Lefnei Iver Lo Temech Shal. Because one could find themselves in a situation that, technically speaking, they are not in violation of that mitzvah, but V'asita Yashar V'hatov. Is it the good and the right thing to do? Right? The Asita Shatov seems to come to give me the opportunity to think about my moral actions, even though I'd be hard pressed to find a line in the Shulchan Aruch that I'm violating. I have this other meta principle looking over me, saying, "Okay, but the Asita Yashar V'hatov." Right? Is it right for me to do this? Like Josh said, it's mutar, but should I anyway? Right? It's mutar, but should I anyway? I was getting off the plane yesterday. I was in the middle of this national disaster of plane travel yesterday, and we landed in Denver finally after like 10 hours of delays. And I, like everyone else, just wanted to get off that plane as quickly as I can. And as I was stepping into the aisle, I saw a whole bunch of people running from the back of the plane, and they had another connection that they were barely going to make. So I had the right to get out of the of my seat into the aisle and walk off, but no, I or maybe via haftalah hakamocha. What would I want someone to do if I were in their shoes? So I stepped back into my aisle, and I let those, 15 to 20 people, even though, like, we all wanted to get off the plane, get off first. Is that a great example? I'm not sure. It's an example of would I have been in violation of any hard halachic principle, had I exercised my right to get off the plane just like everyone else? Probably not, but it would have made me a jerk. And the Torah says, don't be a jerk, right? By saying, v'yasite. And so this is very subjective and very hard, right? Rabbi, should I buy stock in this company? They just seem to skirt on the edge of legality. I don't know. It depends how you feel about v'yasite Rabbah HaTov. It depends how you feel about v'yahavtu l'chak kamocha. I think that to me seems to be the more the not the easier principle to apply, but the more direct principle to apply, because it's again, it's very hard to be in violation of lifnei iver lo tei michshol unless I am the actual reason why the person's going to sin, and without my help, they won't be able to. Right, so if someone's building an unethical company and I'm the last bit of financing that they need, I probably shouldn't do it. But those are rare cases. The Ramban says it beautifully. V'asita hayashar. Ulrabotenu bazeh midrash yafeh amru zu pshara v'lifnim mishurat hadin. That's what we're talking about here. Lifnim mishurat hadin. Going beyond the letter of the law. When the letter of the law says, yes, you can invest, yes, you can buy, yes, you can sell. Okay, but there's another thing, which is Judaism is not a religion of minimalism. And we shouldn't be doing the right what it, I think it's important to know is halacha is the floor. And halacha is the bare minimum of what we're supposed to do. Then we have these other psukim that teach us otherwise. This is beautiful. At first, Moshe says, follow halacha. But even in areas where you're not commanded, which would be the situations where we're talking about, I guess, based on our analysis of Lifnei Iver, I'm not commanded to divest from this company. But because God loves what's good and right. Now, as Josh said, God can't command this because sometimes it's not fair. Sometimes all I can do is the bare minimum. But if I apply Asita Yashar V'Hatov, I'm going to starve. Okay, I don't have to starve for Asita Yashar V'Hatov. I have to starve for Lifnei Iver, but I don't have to starve for Asita Yashar V'Hatov. But if v'yasita v'yasher tov means I'm not going to starve, then that becomes an operative principle. V'zeh inyan gadol l'fisha iyafshar laskir b'torah kol hanhagot adam. It's impossible for the Torah to give us every example of how we should conduct ourselves in every situation. Im shchina v'raya v'chol masa'o u'matano, with our neighbors and with our business transactions. V'tukunei ha'yeshuv, and how we set up our society. V'hamedinot. Right here, the Ramban is getting into politics, right, or society. It's impossible to set up every rule. Every society is different. Every situation is different. So the Torah gives us some broad parameters, broad principles. One of them is v'yastita v'asher ha'tov. Another one is v'yahavta v'achar kamocha. Another one is kedoshim tihiyu. These broad principles, which we apply lifnim mishurat hadin, after I've cleared the hurdle, right? My first obligation is I have to clear the baseline halachic hurdle. Then I know I'm allowed to. But then again, as Josh said, should I? And that's, I think, where these questions come to. And by the way, the should I is not only, I think, a function of just do I want to help the person? It's really, do I want to be associated with that? Right? Do I want to be associated with the person, right? This was the not buying the Mercedes when I was growing up rule, right? My buying the Mercedes was not going to run afoul of Lifnei Iver. It was not helping Mercedes-Benz make cars or not make cars, right? Assuming, and it probably wasn't an unethical company at that point, right, in 1980. But do I want to be associated with that history? Maybe that's a V'asita Hayashar. Meaning it's not only a function of whether I'm going to actually help their business. I want to be viewed in a certain way. I want to, as a person who people identify as being involved with Torah and religion, I don't know. I don't want to send the wrong message. Maybe it's, you also have this like Morris is watching, right? Morris Ian type of concern. All of these are sort of broad principles. I'll just note one other source, which is really fascinating. This is from Yeshayahu Shapiro, who was known as the Admor HaChalut. He was a Hasidic Rebbe who was a Zionist. And he wrote about what he viewed to be proper economic principles in Israel, in the burgeoning state. He died in 1948. He says, someone who wants to fully fulfill the Torah. This is amazing. You cannot be satisfied with just keeping the explicit rules. One has to delve into the elevated purpose of those rules in order to fulfill the purpose. Like we saw today, there are certain things which are allowed. But are only prohibited because of this pasuk, this principle that we just learned, v'yasita v'yashar. Hare shomeh aleinu achshav kishon. And then he says, then he goes on to say, this is the need of the time. As the Jews are building a new society in Eretz Israel, they should not be satisfied with just following the rules. We have to go lifnim meshurat hadin. We have to go into the v'asita yashar v'hatov and make sure that we are exercising. It talks about kedoshim to you as well at the end. So this question, doing business with unethical companies, really has two sides from which you have to look at. One is the typical practical, explicit black on white halachot of does my ownership in the company, does my doing business with that company, does my purchasing from that company run afoul of me helping that person engage in unethical activity? If it does, I shouldn't do it. The challenge is not always so simple to know if it does or if it doesn't, as we saw. The second viewpoint is from this meta halachic principle of v'asita yashar v'hatov, that I'm not supposed to only govern my life by the baseline floor of halacha. I'm supposed to try to live an elevated existence. Not always easy, not always possible, maybe not always even desirable in a situation where it would make life really, really hard. But that is another Mabat, another viewpoint that we have to take when asking ourselves these questions. And again, it seems to me that most of the time that's what we'll be left with, because it's in these situations, really getting into Lifnei Iver Lo Timchal with all of the exceptions the show, with all the exceptions to that, it seems like it's really good to get to that, to be breaking that bridge. Okay, so there you have it. A few snippets to think about when it comes to this question of doing business with unethical companies. Any comments or questions, anything that you wished we talked about, we didn't talk about, now's the time. Serena, did you want to say something? Serena, you're muted.
We came in late from a concert, so I'm not sure, but I'll give you a musical question. After World War II, so a musician who... musicians who were blacklisted and couldn't get jobs in orchestras because they were accused of Nazi collaboration. And then I'm thinking, like, Putin invaded Ukraine, and then Russian musician couldn't get a job in Canada or something in an orchestra. Like, if you stop buying oil from Russia, Putin cares. If you don't give a Russian musician a job with an orchestra, Putin doesn't care.
Right. So I think that hiring a Russian violinist is not a violation of Lifnei Iver Lo Titein Machshol, nor do I think it's a violation of V'asita Yashar V'hatov. Just doesn't feel like, you know, unless this person, like, besides being a violinist, they're also a military strategist for the Russian army, okay, then I probably don't want to hang around with that person or engage with that person. But if the person just happens to be Russian and they're a violinist, yeah, I think that's, you know, this is, we our community has seen this, right, where there's been calls to not hire or to fire Israeli professors from the universities because certain, you know, departments in the universities have negative or anti-Zionist or anti-Israel views, right? So we know what that feels like. And again, not hiring that professor does not at all affect anything that Israel is going to do. No, so the same thing with the Bologna.
How about if Ernest is an admitted supporter of Putin and his actions in Ukraine?
Yeah, you know, I don't know. I'm not sure. I really don't know what to say in that situation. I think it's a very personal thing about whether or not you wish to engage with that person. I'm not sure if that runs afoul of any particular halachic or meta halachic concern. But again, these meta halachic concerns are very subjective, and it might for you, and supporting someone who does that, maybe I would not want to see that person starve to death, however, right, not be able to work so they can't eat, but you may decide that you personally don't want to have that person come into your house and give you piano lessons because of the, I mean, this goes on all the time now in our very, very broken, fractured, polarized political situation, as every person who has a different view than me, you know, worthy of being blacklisted. I don't know. I don't think so. I would hope that we could talk to people and have civil conversations and even exchange goods and services with people who we disagree with. If they are directly involved in the war in the Ukraine by selling helicopter blades to the helicopters in Russia, okay, that's a totally different story.
There was a pianist that Brian absolutely adores and admires, and we found out that he was a pro-Palestinian supporter, and I was so, this is years ago, and I was so bitterly disappointed. And, you know, he would publish stuff like that so in his social media, I think. Else, how else would we have found out about that? But to hear him play was sublime. And it's not a piano, you know, like somebody else plays, it's going to sound different. It's not just like, you know, you'll get a different worker to do the same job. It is unique. But it was hard to...
Yeah, those these are hard. These are hard cases. I agree. Yeah, I agree. Okay, Mom. Yes, and then Chaim.
No, I'm leaving. I'm saying goodbye.
Me
Okay.
too. Thank
All
you,
right. Good night,
Rabbi.
everybody. I'm open for saying goodbye. Thank you so much for coming on. I hope to see you soon. Laila
Thank
Tov,
you.
everyone.
Bye-bye. Good night. Thank you.
Bye.